Not all houses are built the same. Some are low-tech, at least by definition, but they're high-efficiency homes using natural materials like straw bales or other things. Lydia Dolman at Flying Hammer Productions specializes in natural building practices. She's joining us here in the studio this morning. Good morning, Lydia.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
You bet. Well, tell us a little bit about a natural building material. Like, I would think that a 2x4 would be pretty natural, but you're talking about some other things that people don't always think about to use for building materials.
Right. You're right in that a 2x4 is technically a natural building material. But when we talk about a natural wall system, for the most part, is we're looking at locally based, low-tech, minimally processed building materials. So for some people, you can visualize what you might build with if, say, petroleum was out of the picture. So things like straw bale, minimally processed. It's a waste product, essentially, from grain harvesting. And then there's other different wall systems. Like, people might be familiar with something called cob, which is like a freeform adobe, which adobe is just earth and sand and a little bit of fiber.
And straw bales, I would think there's a lot of those in this area, aren't there?
There are quite a few. Like right now, if you're driving around in the Little Applegate or up in the Rogue Valley, you'll see that a lot of people have harvested their grain from their spring wheat. And in the field right now are a bunch of these big, beautiful golden bales, which is different from hay bales. So there's a big distinction there. A lot of people say hay bale house, but hay is actually a food. It still has nutritional value in it, whereas straw is the waste product. So it's just the hollow tubes left after grain harvesting.
Other than straw bales, are there other building materials that would be appropriate, would be good for Southern Oregon and Northern California?
It depends. That's always my answer. But in a lot of situations, that there's a hybrid method of building called straw clay, which works with a structural system. So, and that just means that you're using timbers to hold up the roof, and the straw clay is basically loose straw mixed with clay, and then it's packed into a form. And that comes from an old German building technique. And some people do cob structures or adobe. I don't know of any adobe in southwestern Oregon, but I generally recommend folks for doing that for smaller structures, just because it's much more massive and less insulative, and so it's a little harder to heat.
I was thinking about straw bales. They must have a pretty good R value.
Yeah. So depending on the size of the bales, you can get bales that are 2-string, which is about 18 inches wide, or 3-string, which is 24 inches wide. So that kind of sets the thickness of your wall system. So if you had an 18-inch thick wall system with straw bales, as you're looking at anywhere from R30 up to R60, depending on how you orient them or how thick the straw bales are.
So are you using the straw bales primarily as insulation in the home construction? I mean, if somebody were to come to you and say, I'd like a straw bale house, is it going to look like straw bales on the outside? I had somebody tell me yesterday, it's just like the Three Little Piggies. Is the house going to get blown down?
Those piggies really set the standard. it could basically look as conventional as you want it to look. Like, we've done projects where it actually is clad in wood siding, or it can have sort of a Southwest look, or, it can think Tuscan style where it's a plastered finish. It's very smooth. People are really attracted to it, both for its insulation value, but also the aesthetic, because it's highly sculptural. So you can do a lot of different finishes and have a lot of different aesthetics that you're looking for with straw bale.
How does it compare in terms of cost? I mean, I think in your mind, you're thinking, oh, I can just go grab some straw bales out of my neighbor's farm and throw a house up. But that's not really the case, is it?
Right. That's not the case. Although technically you could do that and create some shelter and it would be really low cost. But like many things, it really depends. So the beauty of straw bale is that a lot of the owners or people who are going to inhabit the house want to participate. And because it is on some level much lower tech, and you don't need as many tools as you would need if you were doing conventional framing, is that the owner, the family, you can have more community involvement, and therefore you can displace some of your labor costs. But if you say you don't want to be involved and you hire somebody, then I would say the cost for construction compared directly to conventional construction, but really the savings are in the long-term costs. So energy costs over the lifetime of a building are sometimes 75% of what you're paying. So if you can mitigate those significantly, then you can really diminish the long-term costs of a building.
Oregon code, is it friendly to builders who are pursuing natural materials, or is it sort of like off the radar for the code people? And you're wrestling with them all the time to do new things.
Right. I would say most of the time that it's relatively friendly. I think there's code written and you can follow what's considered a prescription. And as long as you do that, then your code officials might scratch their head a little bit and be like, what are you doing? But then it's written down where you have to follow certain procedures. The challenge for most people is to get a loan at this point. Since the housing crisis in the late in 2008, getting a loan for anything, whether it's conventional or not, has made it much more challenging for people.
Folks are gun-shy on lending money.
Yeah. Yeah.
If you'd like to join the conversation this morning, I'm speaking with Lydia Dolman at Flying Hammer Productions, specializing in natural building practices, 800-838-3760, or give us a call, jx@jeffnet.org. I was going to ask about your company, Flying Hammer Productions. What all do you do?
We do both construction, consulting, and education. Or that's three things. It's more than both.
And you do workshops from time to time, correct? Don't you have one coming up in the near future?
I do. So I really love to – a lot of people want to build for themselves. And in order to, like, not make as many mistakes as you would on your own, or there's a lot of books you can learn from videos, but there's something to be said from actually getting your hands in and being able to do stuff and see – you know, see what works and what doesn't work. So from July 19th through the 25th, we're doing a load-bearing straw bale, which is a little bit different, little small outbuilding at By George Creamery in the Little Applegate.
Do you recommend that people build something small at first before they tackle a full-size home?
Oh, yeah. I think there's just so much to be learned in the and there's just so many ways that you want to do things differently the second time around. So I definitely recommend start with an outbuilding or your garage and then see how you feel about that. And then for your main building that hopefully you're going to live in for the rest of your life, you'll kind of work out the kinks or design things that you would do differently.
There's all this buzz recently, at least online, about the tiny house movement. Mm-hmm. Does that figure into that as well?
Oh, totally. I mean, I think the beauty of a small house is that you're overall going to spend less money. And so you can spend that money on all the little details that you're interested in. And I live in 520 square feet with my partner, two dogs and a child, which is microscopic by American standards. And we make it work. And I think that there you can spend so much money making a big house, but ultimately, like, you're spending so much money over the long term heating and cooling it and also paying a bigger mortgage. And if you can simplify and have a smaller house, I think it kind of helps you reprioritize your values and makes you think a lot more about material items and stuff. And a small house generally tends to get designed a lot better because you have time to focus on it.
From Bruce in Ashland, I build pole buildings. We need to thin the forest. Can infill with straw and clay, or better yet, chips and clay? We have very little straw growing here, lots of small trees.
Right. Absolutely. I am a big advocate of small frame pole frame buildings. My partner's a great pole framer. And I think it is great. It's a perfect partnership because one big facet of the whole philosophy of natural building is to really use the materials that are locally on hand. It wouldn't make sense to really pursue straw bale if you didn't have straw bales available near to you. And same with here, being in the Pacific Northwest, is that we grow a lot of trees. And in order to, like, help build a healthier forest, pulling out some of the smaller suppressed growth, which are great strong trees, and utilizing those. Straw bale, being very sculptable, can wrap around those poles and still give you great insulation because it can kind of encompass the poles and you don't end up losing insulation right where that pole just sticks between what would be considered a conventional stick frame building.
We used to have, in this country, it seemed like folks used natural materials because it was so expensive. You know, who was going to import something? And often you were poor. You see these sod houses out on the plains when mm-hmm. people were first striking out that direction. And, of course, in the Northwest, you'd use a lot of timber to build with. Are we seeing a return to that attitude? Because certainly there was a time in the 20th century where everything is just standardized and throw it up, and you have these neighborhoods that all look the same. I think of Levittown in New York that sort of pioneered that look. Are we getting back to more of a natural local materials for building?
Right. I think a lot of people are attracted to it for a whole variety of reasons, whether it's the economic, whether you're talking about non-toxic building materials, or if you really want to focus on revitalizing the local economy by purchasing or incorporating local materials. Or there's just the self-sustaining aspect of it where, you know, you've participated in this whole process of building your house and you have a deeper sense of ownership and you have an understanding of where all your materials materials come from. And that, I think, for a lot of people makes for a much richer experience, and they have a deeper kind of qualitative relationship with the structure that they're inhabiting versus just something that just came from somewhere else and it was more of a purchased product or commodity instead of, you know, a home or something that has more of a deeper story to it.
If you're using materials from your local area, would I be assuming too much to say that perhaps you'll have more energy efficiency because these are materials that are native to this area? So you're not trying to force some product to do something that it's not designed to do, for example, in Southern Oregon. Is that too much of an assumption?
Well, I think if you consider transportation costs, like if you're importing materials, even if they're, you know, like when you go to your big standard box store, a lot of that stuff comes from really far away. And so somehow, somewhere in there in the equation is you're incurring the transportation costs. And I think, you know, when we talk about trying to revitalize Southwestern Oregon's economy, like by employing and having relationships with people who are within your county or your state, like you're helping kind of keep those dollars and those jobs in the county. So building locally, you know, even if it's not straw bale, but say you have a local millwright that you get your wood from, is that you're kind of helping build up our local economy.
I hear the term, you know, green building and natural materials. Are they the same thing? Are they related? Or are they two really different things?
I think the way I usually sum it up is that green building is kind of an umbrella statement for you're kind of taking the environment into consideration. So you can buy products that are more green, which means that they, by some standard, are in like trying to take the environment into consideration. But natural building is more of an intense subset of green building, where you're really looking at local, place-based, low-tech, and minimally processed and non-toxic materials. So you can still have a green building material, but it can still be toxic or it can be highly processed. So you can get these things that are like uber recycled, and that's green and it's great in a way, but natural building just seems to be taking it a few steps farther.
Do you have a trade organization in your industry, or is this more hyper local?
You know, I would say we have a loose knit global affiliation with it's a great community of folks who are all interested in the same building style. And we kind of, on some level, we consider ourselves a movement, because so much of the work that we're doing is about so many other things than just the building process. But, you know, it's about so many changes on different layers and levels. But we don't have like a union. But at some point, I mean, that could definitely take place, because plastering is a part of natural building and there's a plastering union. But once you get to a kind of an industrial scale, where you're employing people, or you have that big of a group of people all working on something, is that sometimes you're stepping out of what natural building is, being very place-based and localized.
So I see. We have a question by email from Jay. He'd like to know, how do you keep rodents from living in the walls?
That is a great question. Really good detailing. So particularly with straw bale, where you get kind of these like fuzzy bricks that are stacked together, and you still have kind of crevices where creatures could potentially get in there. And ideally, you're getting straw that doesn't have any seed head in there. Is that you're starting with a really solid foundation. You're plugging all of your plumbing and electrical holes through there, and your earth and plaster, for the most part, will cover up and make it something that rodents and insects don't want to crawl through to get into your building.
Patricia from Myrtletown wants to know, how do straw bales deal with earthquakes?
That is an excellent question. So there's a lot of study going on right now. There's a group of folks who've been working in Pakistan trying to create low-cost, earthquake-resistant structures. And the beauty of straw bale is that they're really fuzzy. So if you were to zoom in with a microscope and you would look at how plaster attaches to them, it's just like when you get clay stuck on your arm and you have to pull it off and it pulls your arm hair, it has a tremendous amount of shear strength. So what these folks have been doing is they've been practicing with using plastic netting to increase the shear on these structures. So if you get So the shear kind of distributes any forces. So say in an earthquake, you have uplift, you have pushes from the side. Is that gives it a lot more strength than you would with a stick frame building, or with the hard thing about adobe buildings, which you see in a lot of different places like in Nepal and where they've had a lot of earthquakes recently, is that what ends up happening is the building doesn't necessarily fall apart, but the mortar between some of the bricks pulverizes. And with a straw bale structure, is that they've done oh gosh, what's it, like a shake test is what it's called. And they found that they are, if they've built appropriately and they have good plaster, because you have plaster on both sides, is that you get really good shear strength. So they would handle very well if they've been built well in a seismic situation.
Got some give to them.
Right.
Jay had a second question that he wanted to ask about reusing and recycling. How about things like glass bottle windows or pop bottles with water or other things mm-hmm. that we make a lot of stuff, don't we? And
right.
It goes into the landfill. Are mm-hmm. there things that are manufactured that we could be reusing for home building?
Oh, right. I mean, lumber is one thing that we can reuse. Windows, if they're of good quality. There's so many different building materials that you can take out if you do it. If you do it well, you can reuse them, even sheetrock and things like that. But with glass bottles, and I mean, the sky's the limit. That's the beauty of, you know, being able to be participating in your own building structure, is that you can do things in a way that are really artistic and beautiful.
Are you optimistic about the future of natural building materials? Do you see a growth in the number of people who are requesting to have their homes built this way?
Oh, totally. Yeah, I would say that, you know, straw bale sort of had experienced its resurgence in the late 70s and has been growing ever since. So, yeah, it's pretty fantastic in the fact that, A, there's code for it, and, B, that there are banks that are willing to lend, insurance companies that are willing to insure. Like, all of these things are on that other level of normalcy that make it easier for folks who maybe aren't necessarily – who live in an urban area where you're going to be scrutinized. So there are straw bales in Portland. There's straw bales in major cities. And I think that's where – an area where buildings get kind of scrutinized in a way where it's a little harder to build something a little bit out of the ordinary.
As an insulation material, what kind of life expectancy can you get out of straw bales? Is it as good as I hate to use the word conventional building mm-hmm. materials, but you know what I mean.
Oh, right. Yeah, I would say it compares, if not, it's superior in a way, because generally when you're building with straw bales is you don't have a bunch of studs and then insulation in between. Is what you have is this like continuous thermal envelope. So you would have your studs either on the inside or the outside or whatever the structure for your building, or you're actually using the straw bales as the structure. And then you have a very uniform, what's considered a thermal envelope. So you don't get all these materials with different insulation capacities making up your wall system, as you get something really solid the entire way around.
You mentioned your upcoming workshop. What are some other topics that you have done in the past or you hope to do in the future?
Oh, for workshops?
For workshops, yeah.
Oh, well, I love straw clay. I teach a lot of carpentry, specifically for women, introductory carpentry classes. And we also do cob and, yeah, basically any kind of wacky building system. Like, I love building small, creative, artistic projects with people for communities so that they can learn and provide for themselves.
And these backyard offices are really becoming popular, aren't they?
Right, right. It's a fantastic loophole in the building code that you can build an outbuilding under 200 square feet, because for a lot of people, you can get the office space, you could get that little auxiliary bedroom, you can just have a storage shed without having to go through all of the costs for permitting a building. I mean, you permit the plumbing and electrical if you're going to put that in there, but for the most part, you're not going to have to permit the structure.
I didn't ask, how did you get involved in this as a profession?
Oh.
What attracted you to it?
You know, I wish I'd known about it since I was a kid, but at one point I was trying to figure out a way to synthesize my love of sculpture and social justice and ecology. And at one point I was in Missoula, Montana, and I met a group of women who were building affordable ecological housing with straw bales. And I had that like religious moment where I saw the light, and that I've basically been doing that ever since.
And where do you hope to go with it?
You know, that is a great question. I think the education, I just want to continue on, you know, mostly it's less about the structure, actually, even though I love that because it's really an artistic facet, but really having people understand place and where materials come from, and to have a sense of ownership and to be empowered in having an understanding of how basically our structural world is put together.
Where can people go to get more information other than attending one of your workshops or hiring you to build their home?
Right.
Where can they go?
They can do all that. So I have a website called theflyinghammer.com, and they can go, you know, I've got like a frequently asked questions page, which is really great because there are a lot of frequently asked questions, and a gallery, and you can just, and there's lots of information on there.
Boyd from Wolf Creek has this comment. Fasteners are one of the most important choices for builders. Poles seem particularly receptive to being connected with nuts and bolts. Threaded rod can be cut to length depending upon the variable diameter of the pole. So do you use that a lot? Do you use like threaded rods to change size, or do you use mostly nuts and bolts and sort of conventional ways to tie it all together?
Mostly, well, we use a lot of the big timber spikes for using the poles, and then also they're like timber locks. There's some kind of engineered fasteners that really hold things together and still have a lot of shear, because definitely nails give a lot more shear strength than screws. And it just really depends on each structure, so each one's totally different in terms of how we're going to fasten them together, and particularly with poles because they're so idiosyncratic that you have to do something different with them each time.
Is your construction work mostly rural, or are we seeing it in urban areas? I think some people would want to go rural because oftentimes there's less code to worry about.
Right. And, you know, it's a little bit of both. I spent a little over 8 years building in Portland and really working hard to get straw bale on the map in an urban area. So I do both. So there were a couple straw bales I worked in Ashland last winter. And, you know, I like the balance between rural and urban.
And do you think it's easy to get loans?
No. That's the hard part.
That's the bad part. Huh?
Yeah. So I think, but I do know plenty of people who have gone through, I think it's hard in general, whether you're doing straw bale or not. It's definitely a much more restrictive now to get a construction loan.
Are there like certain lenders, do you have like a list of lenders you can provide to people when they contact you that are perhaps a bit more friendly than others?
Right. Well, I could probably, if someone inquired with me, I could give them a list of people that I've worked with who have gotten loans in the past, but you know, it's so hit or miss. You know, in terms of who's going to loan for what, like they have their own equations for who they're going to lend money to.
The whole process from start to finish until they turn the key and move in, is it about the same as a conventional home, or is it a longer process because of some of the permitting and loan issues?
You know, we've done projects where we've tried to whittle down the permit process so that it was less of a hurdle for folks, because the biggest thing is the engineering, because all the materials are a little bit different. So if you've done your homework and done your engineering ahead of time and you submit your plans, then for the most part, if you're following the code and the prescriptions and not doing anything unusual, then you should just be right on track. It should be fine.
Joining us this morning has been Lydia Dolman of Flying Hammer Productions, specializing in natural building practices, including straw bales and other materials. And you have a website?
I do, theflyinghammer.com.
Go to theflyinghammer.com and talk to Lydia and head that direction if you want to build a straw bale home or some other natural material. Thanks, Lydia, for being here today.
Thank you so much.